doing our practice skillfully and appropriately is most important. In a fundamental way, there is no specific thing that we could call practice that we have to do in a fundamental way. I've been yesterday speaking of Kweishan, and I'll talk a little more of what he said, since he touched on this matter. He says, if a person is truly awakened, truly enlightened, and fully realize the fundamental, aware of who, what he is, this life is, there's no issue of practice or not practice, or cultivation or not cultivation. But ordinarily, which is the case for all of us, for most of the practitioners and teachers you encounter, even though there's some awakening to who and what we are, or this original mind, as a result of causes of all sorts, so that you can use the word we're awakened, nevertheless there is the what you can call the inertia of habit, or let's see how someone else, basic delusion, or the inertia of reactive habits formed from the beginningless time. In other words, not that there's something we need to look at where it comes from, but this very life that we are, for us, for each of us in our own particular way, we live out specific habits, karma, if you want to use that word. If you want to use self-centeredness, that's another word that you could use for this. Each of us live our own cause and effect, habits, and it can't be totally eliminated at a stroke. Even though he started off saying, of course it can, for that rare individual. But for most of us, much of the time, we're in the midst of this. And that's exactly where we have to work with, whether it's, we call it elimination or dissipation of the manifestations of karma, he says, which causes the remaining delusions, attachments, to come to the surface. That's our cultivation. That's what has to be taught. He calls it, this process is cultivation. Of course, he brings this up because there are some who spoke of instantaneous enlightenment and others who made a point of speaking of gradual cultivations. It's not an either or. It's always instantaneous, and yet, unless it's this rare, true, full awakening, we get glimmers, all of us in our practice, in various extent, have glimmers of this original, we say, nature that we are. Nevertheless, we need to develop this cultivation that's appropriate for us, for our particular karmic habits, habits of body, habits of mind, habits of reaction. Kuei-san says, there isn't a hard and fast special method. We each need to know the general direction that our cultivation must take. See, our cultivation means the cultivation that's appropriate for, if I say, my karmic habits. And there isn't some bundle that I could look for and say, oh, it's those. It's what arises now in terms of, in the midst of the ongoing cause and effect that is each of our lives. And it's different for each of us. It's different in terms of what we bring to the moment. It's different in terms of who and what is in our life. And yet we need to not have a hard and fast method, but nevertheless, we need to know what the direction that our cultivation is, and we need to be able to see how and what is skillful and appropriate action, practice for us. And that's part of what we get to clarify individually, together, individually in Dokusan, here when we speak, clarifying for ourselves and also for each other by hearing others. What's the appropriate cultivation for me that I must be sensitive and aware of? As he puts it, the elimination of manifestations of karma which cause the remaining delusions to come to the surface. That has to be taught. There is no other way to cultivate, to practice. Nevertheless, always we need to know this true nature that we are, that is our life. It isn't ever stained, troubled by even a speck of dust. There's not a thing in way. Never. Even as I say, there's cultivation. No actions distort this fundamental nature. Earlier, he made a point of emphasizing this. One does not need to shut one's eyes and ears to be non-attached to things. Every hour of the day, every moment, our hearing and seeing is ordinary, plain and straightforward, without any pretense, without anything special. It's accept what we do with this that we are from the beginning that gets in the way. This was, as I said, about 1,100 years ago, addressed to practitioners. Doesn't matter then or now, the specific circumstances that we live in varies, but the specific nature of who we are and what our practice is, and even more fundamentally, I'll repeat, who and what we are isn't any different. It's just how to see and make good use of what skillful practice for us that we need to clarify. So that no matter what the so-called difficulty that arises, we know how and what to do. No matter what the ongoing change that arises, we know when to make our practice effort and what to do. See? Otherwise, from the beginning, whether you call it so-called awakened or enlightened or so-called non-enlightened, no different. It's just not holding to ideas, whether we call them ideas of emptiness or ideas of ordinariness or ideas of delusion. This is our original nature from the beginning that each of us encounters from morning to night, except when we cloud it, believe this karmic habit, inertia of events that gets in the way. So what I want to do now, having said this preamble, is talk about specifically what cultivation is called for, because that's what's useful to each of us, to see when cultivation is called for, what is skillful cultivation, what I'm unable to do. But not in the sense of believing that cultivation is to get me somewhere else. Not in the sense of believing that I need to get rid of something. Bai Cheng said to Guishan, if you want to understand the meaning of Buddha nature, you should look in the realm of temporal causation, meaning in the realm of ongoing change that is our life. That's the only place, or as the sixth ancestor said, ongoing change is Buddha nature, which is exactly your life and is the life of the circumstances and conditions that you have difficulty with, that you react to through karmic habits or karmic inertia. Again, don't get caught in the word karmic. Use a different word if you want. Simply self-centered attachment and thoughts. simply reactive habits that seem so natural to us, so that our reaction to the body-mind state is such that it clouds our ability to be who we are. Clouds our ability to be who we are. So, all we're doing in Sesshin is being who we are and getting to see where are we clouding our ability to be who we are. Okay, so what I want to do is look at this together, because doing so, we could make good use of our time the rest of Sesshin. So I'll stop now, and please be courageous and bring up what's called for, what's necessary, because that's where we could see and be our hearing and seeing throughout the day, which is nothing but the hearing and seeing of this true nature. See? Then naturally our life is illuminated and perfect, and confusion doesn't cloud us. Yes, Mushin.
So, I don't know about courage, but when you're talking, what came to mind for me was a short story. I'm not sure it was a case, but a story of a monk complaining to the teacher, saying, "But I'm only human. I have thoughts and feelings, and I struggle with things." And the teacher said, "Well, Buddhists have thoughts and feelings and struggle with things." And the monk said, "Well, how come I'm not a Buddha?" And the teacher said, "Because you're not willing to be a human." Mm-hmm. And that's the way I've noticed that in my practice, not willing to be a human being.
Be more specific.
Well, if not willing... If someone close to me is making me angry, because of this practice stuff, I have this idea that I'm not supposed to react to that. This reaction is not supposed to come up and arise and cause complications and discomfort for me. So that kind of starts the ball rolling.
Uh-huh.
Of self-recrimination, and that feeds this energy of...
Yeah.
And next thing you know, you're in a fight with somebody over something very minor and simple.
Or with yourself.
Well, you start with yourself. Usually for me, it starts with myself, and then that energy has to go somewhere, so I throw it out.
Uh-huh.
Give them some of it to try and get rid of a little bit.
So...
And...
At what point, let's stop for a moment, do you practice with that?
The practice, assuming I practice in that moment, not saying that I always do, would be to just be present and aware of this bodily experience is taking place. And there's a lot of things you can do from that point on. You can look who is getting upset. But what I find most helpful is notice that sensation arising and then pay attention to what the other person is actually saying.
Mm.
Is the tone of their voice, the look on their face. Because what I've noticed is oftentimes when that happens, I'll turn inward and I'll kind of miss that connection, that experience, that contact with what's really going on, and it becomes a self-defeating mechanism.
When you say pay attention, let's be more specific about that, or what is and isn't useful. Paying attention means being intimate with it, rather than paying attention in order to see what you agree or disagree with about it, or how it's right or not quite wrong, or really wrong.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the first, that's the reaction, is paying attention at that level where uh-huh. you're looking to disagree or agree or make a judgment about that other person. That's the first experience that starts this caught upness situation to arise. And once that happens, that's fine. Mm. That happens. But then the kind of paying attention I'm talking about is the intimacy that you said about what is this person really saying? Mm. And what is this person trying to tell me, or what are they expressing, as opposed to what I think or feel or assume they're expressing.
And what I, quote, like or don't like about it, or to use the word that Guishan used, what karmic habit reaction is being set off by it. See, none of us want to believe that karmic reactions or reactive habits occur for us. That's just the way it is. It's just what the way that's right or wrong, or the way the thing should be or shouldn't be. That's the only things that happen to me. There are nothing problematic with those. It's feelings that I should or shouldn't have to experience. See, all sorts of emotion, thought, states arise and pass. If we believe that some shouldn't and some should arise for us, and we believe it so deeply that the reactiveness to it jumps up so quickly and we don't notice it, then we act out of that. That's exactly what he's talking about. There's where the cultivation or practice, whatever word you use, cultivation is just another translation for the same word that we translate, the same Chinese word that we translate as practice. Yeah, so, and there's no problem first trying to get this with our reasoning mind, our understanding, and then slowly that deepens into our spontaneous practice with it, so that it becomes, if I say it, natural for us to be able to practice when that arises for us. Otherwise, there'd be no point talking here. But there is a point. But not so that it leads us to figure out and make another catalog of what I need to fix or do, because from the beginning, it's only the attachment that blinds us to nothing to fix, nothing to do. Yes, Shoujo.
I think people have heard, I'm not sure of the word, but people have heard of this, but like the Goldilocks theory or something like that, or plan, or whatever that.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you?
Well, perfect. Yeah. You know, things are just perfect, you know, because, like, for example, the earth is, that's why I usually heard it, is the earth's in the right spot, the right size, right consistency, it's got liquid center, all this kind of stuff. You know,
colder life zone.
No, but let's stop that for a moment.
Okay.
When you say perfect, what are you saying with that?
That perfect according to the person's own standards.
So perfect the earth is, quote, in the perfect place if you want A, B, C,
right, right.
D.
Right, for life and whatever.
Right.
Water.
But why would, why is Mars not in the perfect space?
It's too far away. It's too small.
Too far away for what?
For the heat of the...
Isn't Mars in the perfect place for Mars?
Oh, yes.
For, according to the forces, whatever they were, that brought Mars and keeps Mars there.
But I'm just using that as an example. I want to get to something else.
Good. Right. No, but I want to get to the word perfect that
right.
we use.
Perfect in is kind of, it's not perfect. Perfect is just perfect for that particular point of view, I suppose.
That's right.
So I find that when I'm just, you know, in everyday activity, I'm always looking for that Goldilocks zone. And what comes up for me is that, you know, things are too one way or too the other way, or people are too small, too short, too old, too young, too this, too... Everything's what comes up that, you know. And every once in a while, you see that from my point of view, oh, this is perfect. And before I can even appreciate it, it's already in my rearview mirror and something else is coming up.
That's wonderful. Because it's wonderful to notice that we're saying this ongoing change, that means things get to be, quote, imperfect or not perfect as you believe, is exactly Buddha nature. See, the troubles that we have is when we get attached to the perfect that we believe things need to be, or even more, the perfect that we think others need to be perfect. Because we're saying they're not perfect as it is, and we're not perfect as it is. If I'm headachy, I'm not perfect. If I bang myself and have an achy arm or leg, it's imperfect. If I wake up and I'm not feeling, quote, well, that's not perfect. This is exactly what he was talking about when he talked about the ongoing inertia of karma. In other words, the ongoing cause and effect that is our life. See, that's exactly where attachment blinds us. That's exactly where we miss our life. We're sitting in the midst of ongoing change. We don't sit to get to the moment in our sitting that's perfect and then say, I've got to hold on to this. See, from the beginning, you are perfect as you are. From the beginning, you are perfect as you are. That's why we can practice. Because from the beginning we are nothing but this. See, that's why when he started out, truly awakened or enlightened is someone who's realized the fundamental nature of who they are and is aware of themselves. What our life is being this fundamental nature that we are, which we miss when we believe our, whatever they are, our stories of perfect and imperfect. It's nothing wrong to enjoy when you're feeling, quote, the Goldilocks spot, but also know that that's going to change. Then can you enjoy the not Goldilocks? The oatmeal that's too hot? And the
too many of those.
Too many of those.
And I get caught up in, well, I don't know about everybody else, but I certainly get caught up in that stuff.
Right.
And I don't like that. I mean, there's another thing that's upsetting, getting caught up in that, and then it just kind of goes on and builds up, and it just gets crazy.
And that's exactly what he's saying. See, we have to learn how to do practice and cultivation when that is going on?
That's the part I don't understand. I don't get.
Well, yes, you do understand. It's just we don't want to do it. We don't want to make the skillful effort when that occurs. Now, it's easy. One of the advantages of Sesshin is that Sesshin gives us, most of us, most of the time, a little taste or a big taste of this that we are. We settle naturally into being present, if I say it in such a way. And if the causes are appropriate, and it's not up to us to determine those, then we get a little sense of this life that we are, tasting it with our tongue, with our body, with our being, not because we figured it out. But then, if the habit of believing Goldilocks and not Goldilocks, or believing too cold, too hot, too lumpy, too soft, too, if that kicks in without us knowing that that's our cultivation has to go in that direction, then you're right, we're bound to be troubled. But you know that there's cultivation there. See, you know, if you're not in the Goldilocks moment, if you believe you're not in the Goldilocks moment, right there is a reminder, a little poke. Practice now. Cultivation now. What's skillful now? Not the fact that you're not in that moment, however you describe it, but because you believe that's not the okay moment, that's not the Goldilocks moment, that Mars isn't where it's okay, only on Earth is it okay. And I mean that in both the actual sense and in the specific sense of that metaphor in our life. See, we get to meet are Buddhas and Bodhisattvas from morning to night. All we get to meet are original nature from morning to night. That's all we get. And yet, we insist. Not this one, not this one, not this one. Maybe this one. Oh, no longer that one. So maybe another one. And I don't mean just in persons, but I mean in so-called our body-mind condition or that of so-called others. So, thank you for bringing that up. Yeah.
Well, maybe I missed it somewhere, but I don't see the manual that tells you what to do to fix things like that. You know, when you buy something, they always give you a manual on how to work it and everything, which I never read anyway. But
yeah, you do know the manual. The manual is called cultivation practice.
But how do I do that? That's something I don't.
Sometimes you know how, and sometimes the manual is working with not knowing. Being not knowing how and making your best effort. See, the Buddha taught that from morning to night throughout his life, and the various ancestors and teachers have taught that, each in their own way, each with their own emphasis. There isn't, that's what Guishan said. No hard and fast rule, is just a general direction. The general direction has to be where we're holding on to attached, believing self-centeredness, all the other ways we can talk about what we do. Caught up in greed and anger, if we say that. Or you could say the precepts. believing all sorts of stories about other people, or about what they're doing, or what's happening to me, or what shouldn't happen to me. And it's not just people, but people is what we usually have the most trouble with. We have a little less trouble with if I go, oh, my legs, oh, it's so terrible. It's so terrible that my legs hurt when I sit, or my legs ache, or I've become weaker, or whatever, or I need this or that operation. That's what ongoing change is. Guaranteed. Being born, getting sick, getting old, dying, all those things happen. Guaranteed. Except when we say those things aren't right, they shouldn't happen. I shouldn't be getting old, losing my hair, getting gray, my eyesight going, my hearing going, da-da. Or I should have the right, quote, boyfriend, girlfriend, not the wrong one. Or not the one that I don't want. Or, and you could add on to that. We can go on endlessly in all the different directions. It could be a simple thing like, why is that person walking down the street dressed like that? I know they're dressed wrong. They're so foolish to dress that way. How come the traffic's not going in the way I want? Simple things like that. As soon as we say that, we get trouble. There's a song like that, something to do with trouble.
There's a lot of songs about trouble.
But all the things that we call trouble. And really, that's what Kweishan is talking about, that's what the ancestors are talking about, that's what all the people that you've heard and read recently are talking about, the things we do to blind ourselves from living, appreciating, being this wonderful, perfect life, perfect Buddha nature that we are. Isn't that one of the ways the Buddha's enlightenment is expressed, is in his saying, how wonderful, how wonderful. All beings are the perfection and wisdom of the Tathagata, the Buddha. All beings. That includes even the ones you think aren't in the Goldilocks space. He said that. So it's reported.
So he's wrong.
Good. You check it out and see if you think he's wrong. Or see what the consequence. Let's go the other way. Let's leave aside his words that he said it. But let's be very simple. What is the consequences of believing that people and circumstances are not okay? See? Let's just be very simple people and talk about consequences. And when we do that, usually the consequence for us, let's be even selfish, the consequence for us is we're stressed, we're suffering, there's harm, there's dissatisfaction. Not even talking about the things that we do to others. It makes us miserable some of the time. So, if you want to be very simple and selfish, you could say we practice because we don't want to be miserable. Let's forget about that we don't want to cause harm to others, even though that's what it is. We don't want to be miserable. So every time you say something's imperfect, right there, so your universe, your own wisdom is reminding you here, how and what is practice now. What's skillful and appropriate to do when I say they're not perfect? You could look. Who's saying it's imperfect? Just keep staying with that. And that's exactly what I talked about a few days ago. I don't remember which day, but that's a consequence of my mind not keeping track of all those things anymore. So we get old, our mind doesn't keep track of everything we said yesterday and the day before. Okay, Laurel, you wanted to say something.
Oh, I had an idea. Okay, well, I was thinking what you could do about that. And one thing you can do about that is when things around you aren't how you want them to be, you could look at them and say to yourself, well, that's actually good. It's, you can, like, look at the bright side of things. But actually, when you look at the bright side of things, you're kind of deluding yourself because, you know, really, it's not good or something. That's wrong. But if you find yourself wanting to make a bad situation good, and at least stopping right there and noticing what you'd like to change about it, or what you think could make it better, the Goldilocks zone that you're referring to might be just that moment, the moment of noticing that something is wrong, and then in the moment you can notice the things about it, because usually it's good and bad, it's not always terrible. You can, if you stop in that moment and look at it, you might be able to see the good versus the bad, and you might even be able to see what you can do to affect it in some way that you want. But my suggestion is that the moment is the Goldilocks zone. That looking for them out there don't exist. It's a big mess out there. But having the moment to see it for what it is.
You said something, Laurel, that I want to bring up. I've mentioned this before. There was a Zen teacher, some of you might know, Philip Kaplow Roshi, who lived in Rochester and taught there. And I remember once I was with him. I wasn't a student of his, but anyway, I was with him, and he was saying he really liked The Life of Brian. Some of you might know that movie, because in that movie there's someone who's being put up on a cross, and they have him and his compatriots to be tortured and killed, and they have him and his compatriots singing a song which
always look on the bright side.
And Kaplow Roshi said that's the best Zen song there is, that's the best Zen movie that there is. So
what's the name of it?
Life of Brian.
Monty
Python movie.
Yeah.
Life of Brian.
Yeah, but the point is simply the always look at the bright side of life. But always look at the fundamentally bright true nature that's shining in each moment of life. See? It's not bright in terms of bright versus bad, but bright in terms of the fundamental true nature that's shining in this circumstance. See? And that's, we don't have to go to extreme ones, because that's what we always want to pick up. Well, how could it be in this extreme one or in that extreme one? Don't worry about those. Take the little ones when it's just a little off, and your friend, family member, partner, whatever, says da 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 instead of ABC. When they say da da da, and you go, right there is your practice opportunity to do what's skillful, to be the perfection of them saying dot dot dot, despite the fact you want them to say ABC. Despite the fact that the reactive habit that comes up for you is so uncomfortable, to be able to see that this uncomfortable reactive habit is nothing but cause and effect, that if I can enter this right now, I can see it's nothing but the Dharma wheel manifesting the true nature of our life right here. our life, me and whoever I'm with at the moment, me and the world right here. That's the practice effort there. But let's see what else you might have to bring up. Thank you, Shoujo, for bringing it up and for being brave and courageous.
Just the shit that comes up. That's all.
But that's exactly being brave and courageous, because that's how we practice being willing to see what arises and being willing to see what is the cultivation with this. Chewing on that. See? That's when sometimes you hear talking about in practice that there's three things required: great faith, great doubt, great determination. That's great determination to chew on what's doubtful, what seems to make no sense, what you don't want to face, what you insist this can't be, what the teaching is about. Because from the beginning, from when you open your eyes and breathe, you are nothing but the functioning of this wonderful, if I use the word life, wonderful true nature, wonderful Dharma mind, if I use that word, that you are. And our sitting and practicing together in Sesshin is an opportunity to touch this, to rest in this and be this. Not that it's not here, not in Sesshin, but Sesshin is particularly useful, skillful time that the form and the practice with others and our own effort enables us to all the more taste and appreciate what we are. But let me stop and see what... Yeah.
Well, some of that sounds a little theoretical when you're in the midst of whatever.
No. In the midst of what? When is it theoretical? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about cultivating in the midst of whatever.
Well, I've had a lot of anxiety.
Good.
For the past couple of years.
No. So when a specific anxiety moment arises, that's the cultivation time. When you say this is not okay, or I don't like this.
Right. And I can do that some of the time through the breath, through that Tonglen practice, through saying my own name, Mseki.
Which is saying, for others who don't know it, saying
trace.
No trace and being present. Yes,
and
wonderful.
I also hate it.
Good. And when you say, I hate it, right there, practice with, I hate it. Practice with, I hate it. Because otherwise we believe this karmic habit, this reactive habit, that I'm supposed to like it, which is another version of what Shoujo said. It's saying it's not the perfect moment. It's not the Goldilocks moment, therefore I hate it. And that, good. So
I try and face it in order to be rid of it.
Ah. Not wrong thinking, but it's sort of we face it and at the same time we're saying, but I'm ready to run away, so therefore that's why I'm here. I'm here in order to get rid of you. That's exactly what said. We face it without holding on to our attachment, or at least noticing. So really noticing I hate it and seeing how can I practice skillfully. What's skillful practice with this really strong I hate it? Whether it's, as Shoujo was talking about, looking at who hates it, or embracing hating. That's what if you want to say breathing it in, breathing it out, or whatever other. And the skillful practice for you is different than the skillful practice for someone else. That's why we each have to do our own. Just like Joshu was saying, he has to go by himself and piss. No one else can piss for him. And that's the same for us. We have to do it, and we have to do it right this moment when we have to do it. And it doesn't mean if we miss a moment, there's anything wrong with it. We get this moment, and we miss it. We get this moment, and we miss it. And we get this moment, and we miss it. And this is... So, what's important for us is to develop, if I say it in such a way, an armory of different techniques, or a storehouse of different techniques of cultivation and practice that we can enlist and use skillfully according to what the reactive habit in the midst of this ongoing change is. Whether it's... Well, we will leave that. So, yeah. And that's why we talk together, and that's why we talk individually, and that's why we practice, and that's why we discover in our, as we practice, what's skillful for us. And what's skillful for us today might not be skillful tomorrow, and what's skillful for one of us might not be skillful for another. Or so, yeah, this is what's important. Yeah.
I can share something of what I was practicing with. The summer I was with many people. I was in Europe, but in particular practice, something that came up repeatedly was being with a person that had. It was a particular situation. It specifically repeated itself at mealtime, that this person would start talking about things that happened about in regards to other people, and was talking about other people. There was a lot of anger. There was a lot of blaming. There was a lot of just repeating the stories over and over again. It was it was so interesting. It was always at mealtime, and so as I was. I mean, it very clearly came, I was aware that this was an opportunity for me to, work with this, because I noticed I was getting very uncomfortable, and it was very difficult for me to listen to this person's stories, and it was just very difficult, and I noticed my stomach, I felt contracted, and so, I don't know, I don't have anything great to say about it. It's just that's what was there, and sometimes I noticed how I was getting upset about this person talking about these other people and their faults, and long stories, so much energy into that went into it, and yet, yes, sometimes I got tight and upset, and then sometimes I could breathe, sometimes I could listen, sometimes I could be just feeling, I tried to feel empathy just with the suffering that was there. But it was so interesting. It just repeated itself over and over again. And then at some point there was, I don't want to go into great details of the stories and all of that, but there were times when I noticed that at the end something had happened, something had opened, something had shifted, not just for me, but really for the person that I was with. And that was very moving for me to see, because there weren't things that happened. And at the time when it was just for me to be with this moment of, I could think, oh, not this again, or why can't you stop, and all of that. But it wasn't. There was there was something that shifted. There was a clear reward, and I could say specifics, but I'm not going to right now.
And you brought up something that I think is very useful and important, because it comes up in different ways this repetition and having to be with things that keep repeating themselves, whether it's in terms of our own repeating the same reactive habit or being with people who keep repeating their own stories. I mean, this is especially evident if you're ever with children or with people who are very old and have some cognitive problems, that they repeat certain things. And our reaction to them, it's interesting, with a child, if a child repeats the same story over and over, or wants to watch the same movie, or wants you to read the same book 5 times, 10 times, every night again, over and over, often, or maybe occasionally, we tolerate that, because after all, it's okay, it's a child. They'll outgrow this. Of course, when someone becomes older and they do this, we don't have that, and we sometimes have less tolerance. Or sometimes even for ourselves, we don't tolerate the fact that we get caught up over and over in similar things. How come I didn't learn that? How come I made that mistake again? Or, oh, why do I have to put up with them doing this again and again? So that's another karmic habit that we don't often notice that we're believing. See? We don't notice that we believe that it should be taken care of once. I only should have to tolerate this once. And yet, when we sit down, we get to breathe over and over and over. We don't say, okay, I've done my one breath in and one breath out, that's it. Is the sun coming up again today? So it's interesting. It's very good to be able to notice when that, I'll call it reactive habit. It's another form of judging. They should be done with it. They shouldn't keep doing this. As opposed to, okay, this is the way they are, and what's skillful being here right now with them, since I'm here right now with them. Since I'm here right now with them. Of course, some of you know there's various stories and themes and even movies where you get to relive over and over and over and over habits until you, what should I say, go beyond your habitual reaction to them. Whether we talk about in various cultures where this is, or modern movies and books. I mean, there's many of you familiar with a sort of a Hollywood treatment of that in Groundhog Day, and there's recently a book, what's it called, Life After Life, by an English woman that deals with this. But this is exactly, you don't need any theories, because this is very ordinary. We go to work, we go to family gatherings, and we get to see over and over certain repetition, and we get to see our own reaction if we have ideas that it shouldn't be this way. And that's a good reminder. So when that word, oh, they're repeating, take that word, that reactive habit, as a practice reminder. Cultivate right now. Cultivate right now. Practice right now. How you should practice comes out of your wisdom, comes out of your ongoing practice. We can talk about things. We can get clear on what might be best to do, but it's your effort in the moment. No one else can do it, just like no one else can breathe this breath for you. No one else. So that's why we practice together. And yet we can be supported by each other. Thank you. Yeah?
You heard the word repeat.
Yes.
And I heard the word blame.
Blame.
Blame. And if I had, you instructed me one way, and if I had not said something about blame in this situation I was in, they would still be blaming. But because I did, then...
Who is they who would still be blaming?
My in-laws.
Ah.
And they turned it around themselves when I said that it, you know, this is sending it out negative, and hurting yourself
right
more than it's hurting that person.
So. Yeah, good. There's different points to bring up, and all, it's not one better than the other, but there's different points, and different points are appropriate. That's why we talk about practice as skillful and appropriate action. And it has to do with who you are at this moment, who you're with, if it's with someone at this moment, what your capacity and their capacity. And it includes them not hearing as well as hearing. It includes them reacting angrily or upset to your not or your yes doing certain things. Your not doing certain things or doing certain things. Yeah. Ah, yes, I'm sorry.
I think sometimes it seems like that. I mean, one time after I came home from Sashin, I made a list of like 5 things to do, you know, to practice. And I don't know. I mean, I still have it, but it's got stuff got put on top of it. But I think sometimes it seems like it's. Like, I think I have to know ahead of time what those things are, but I think in the moment it's more about, am I willing to turn away from this habitual reaction? And if I am, then something presents itself. Either I think of something, or I don't know, a car goes by and I hear the sound, or I don't know, but and sometimes it's just as simple as not saying that thing that is right on the tip of my tongue. I took our daughter, who's 13, and I took her shopping for shoes before school started, and we had been in the store about a month ago, and she'd seen these shoes, and so I thought we were going back to get those, and I was in a hurry, okay, let's go get the shoes. And as we're walking in, she says, oh, and by the way, I'd like to look at some combat boots. And I wanted to say, are you crazy? But I said, oh, huh. I wouldn't have thought of that. oh, everybody's wearing them. She just gotten back from the summer camp. Oh, everybody's wearing them. I said, really? Combat boots. And they weren't what I pictured, but still they were boots. And, you know, that was what she chose. I mean, I, you know, said, oh, it looks like they're going to be hot in, going in August. But just to not say that thing... seems to go a long way.
And you said something very important in the beginning. You said being in the moment. See, that's what enables us, and that's the fundamental practice guideline, or a fundamental practice guideline, is of being present, being this moment, because that enables us to notice both what we're doing and what might be skillful practice there, or what we're believing and holding on to, what's on the tip of the tongue before it comes out, or even before it, or just as it arises. So, and that's ongoing practice. That's the first day we talked about that. It's the being present in what we're doing, or let's say it differently, not being present self-centeredly, or what we call consciousness eating, but being wisdom eating, wisdom functioning, which is present functioning, being present functioning, walking into the store with your daughter, as opposed to walking in and holding on to our idea of what's good and what's not good. And we all do it in different places, so we get to see it at some point. So, but no, you were planning on getting those shoes. That those are the good ones. These combat boots, those, etc.
But sometimes when that habit comes up,
mm-hmm.
it's so strong that you can't even imagine. I mean, being present just pales by comparison. that habit is just so. I don't know. It's just very powerful, and
right.
So,
and the result of that habit often is powerful too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And we know those.
Yes.
So it's not a matter of someone else convincing us that those habits are pernicious or poisonous or. But us seeing and being willing to take the risk of, despite the fact that the habit seems natural for us and, quote, right, perfect Goldilocks habit, take the risk of not acting it out at some point. Yes.
So I came into the Dharma talk today with a bit of a tension, a headache, I would say. Some of it I could tell was just needing a little more water, which I did before I came to the talk. But some of it is just because I had the headache, worrying that I wouldn't be able to make it through the Dharma talk. So just sitting here and, you know, being with that, you know, and noticing the different phases of that tension has been really pretty useful to an extent. And frankly, I'm only talking now because I wondered if I really could, because I had this belief that I couldn't talk, because I was still feeling a little bit like that tension's there. Mm-hmm. So I'm just, you know, appreciative of all that's been said, and but I think what I can take from that too is a lot of times there is this self-talk I notice that sometimes prevents, you know, just being present and just, you know, doing the next thing. You know? So it's been like that a little bit today with this headache. Or whatever it's called, you
know, attention. So.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Well, the last month I've sort of been coming from this place of fear in my dealings with doctors' offices and insurance companies, and. I noticed that I kind of have approached it with, I mean, I've been in such a state of fear, you know, and fear seems to, you know, you get this fight or flight thing going on. So I got attached to one outcome and I kept calling people, looking for them to give me that outcome, and not being able to get it. And it just sort of made matters, you know, worse. And
mm-hmm.
so one thing I've been learning is not to, just recently in the last few days, just when I'm in a kind of panic attack about the thing or anxiety pattern, to not act. I think I finally have learned that if I'm in a very anxious pattern, probably the best thing to do is not try to be skillful. I mean, not think that I have the means by which to operate with intelligence and skill. To just say, okay, you know, you're over the top end, and you just have to back off for now. You have to, you know, do nothing really.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than do, and what I would do is do more. I would take the fear and try to just, you know, ram it down other people's throats. And that is obviously not skillful.
No, but you are talking about what is skillful and what you saw as skillful, which is doing nothing, being still then, that moment, because you were noticing the, as you call it, over the top anxiety, fear that had taken over, so to speak. So noticing that state, doing nothing, being still. And in a way, that's what we do in Zazen. Be still and become intimate with being spacious in that stillness, so that even this over-the-top anxiety, fear, which you mentioned, which Museki mentioned, you can be this present moment of it arising, passing. And if more action is needed, then you might notice and see what that is at another time. Good. Thank you all. I've spoken enough. And we can continue this individually, because this is what our ongoing practice together is, to clarify what's skillful practice, what's skillful cultivation, what's skillful manifesting this wisdom and compassion that is our life, that is this true nature, if I use such words. Thank you.
Copyright 2013, Eliu Genmyo Smith.